I wouldn't say separation, and those guys are continuing to battle. Obviously, when you talk about going in the stadium and guys being able to separate themselves, that's a position that they'll all get a lot of reps on Saturday, and a lot of reps, and they'll get an opportunity to kind of show how they handle operating the offense. The coach is not out there telling them everything and coaching every single rep. So I think they're, you know, some guys will, there'll be some separation on Saturday, I would imagine, just because how, you know, how we're going to set it up. And you hope there is, but there's great competition going in there. A lot of those guys are getting reps and they're all competing and making each other better. The biggest thing, Phil, I would say is just one, how they operate. Okay, they're in the stadium now and it's a scrimmage, game-like setting with officials and everything. How, you know, can guys operate? Can they run the offense and communicate and the things that you have to do? And then certainly protecting the ball. They've done a really good job of that as the head coach. You know, you love it when there's a lot of turnovers from a defensive standpoint because they're taking the ball away. And then you don't like it as an offensive coach or as a head coach because the offense is turning the ball over too much. And then,
all right, welcome back to the GamecockScoop.com podcast, the official podcast of GamecockScoop.com on Rivals. I'm Caleb, joined by Alan, and that was Shane Beamer speaking earlier today about the separation between his quarterbacks and specifically Robbie Ashford and Lenora Sellers, who, you know, are the 1A, 1B at this moment, although maybe that's a good place for us to start. Do you think that this is an actual competition? I think kind of heading into the offseason, we had a we were leaning on the idea that Lenora Sellers is probably going to end up being your starter game one next season, and that Robbie Ashford is one of the most similar and available guys that you could have gotten in the portal, but it wasn't like you brought in like a surefire starter the same way as when you landed Spencer Rattler a couple years ago, and you know, he pretty clearly was going to start over Luke Doty in that particular scenario. So Beamer's talking a little bit about how the scrimmages this spring are starting this coming Saturday, obviously leading up to the spring game here in a couple weeks, about 3 weeks now, and that he's looking for one or the other to kind of take on that leadership role in a game setting and kind of start to separate there. Should we be concerned that they're not separating, or do you think this is just like it's spring, why name a starter at this point sort of thing?
I think there's a lot of that for sure. The last point you just made, and like, I guess like, can you call it a competition? Like, yes, a competition, but also there is one guy they're going to give every opportunity to win it kind of thing. If that makes sense. Like, you don't want to just give him the job on April 2nd, you know, spring game, whatever. You got to see how it goes. Like, Robbie Ashford is here for a reason. We've talked about that on past shows plenty. I also think like the idea, the goal, the hope, the if it all works out the way they want it to, it's going to be Lenoris, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you think back to the portal period, right, you had AJ Swan who came out and committed to South Carolina and then kind of backtracked that because he seemed like he wanted something that was a little bit more of an open competition, I guess. And I think if he looked too closely at the quarterback room here, it seemed like there wasn't a lot of room for him to potentially be the starter. Is Robbie Ashford significantly better than AJ Swan over the course of his career? Maybe. If it's the athletic profile of Lenora Sellers a little bit better, maybe fits some of Logan's background prior to last year as he was working with like KJ Jefferson, where you have a guy that is going to be a little bit more of a threat with his legs than Rattler was over the past couple years. But having said all of that, I will be surprised if Lenora Sellers doesn't take the first snap of the 2024 season, I think.
Yep. I think that's about where I would put it too. Definitely think Sellers is the leader in the clubhouse, is who they would like to have it, is the favorite for sure. And it's less of a, it's not a completely open competition because like you just said, if it was, AJ Swan probably would be here. But also it is still the word competition still applies. You're still going to definitely see both, I'm sure, take a lot of reps, and Dante Reno for that matter. in the spring game here in 2 weeks from Saturday.
Yeah. Davis Bevel, who, you know, started the Red River Shootout, you know, came on as a walk-on. I think, yeah, you have some people that it's good that they're all in the room. It's good that they're all competing. And it's good for Sellers, who, yeah, I mean, he's never started a game at this level. We are excited about the potential. We're excited about the flashes that we saw in the little bit of game action he got last year. But I don't think it's a bad thing that you have other people that have started games at the Power Five level in this room kind of pushing him.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's about where to put it. Other spring notes from today, Beamer talked for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. Bradley Dunn is injured, rolled his ankle within the last week. He's out for the rest of spring ball. Beamer said it's not long-term, but just looking at the rest of the spring, you are down Rocket Sanders, you are down Juju McDowell, you are down Bradley Dunn. That running back room is narrow for the next 2.5 weeks as you're trying to get some reps in and also get the spring game going. Kelton Henderson is no longer in the football program. I think we might have mentioned that last week. I can't remember if it happened before or after we recorded. Beamer said that was a program decision. He just talked that he just wasn't meeting the standards of the program, said he wished him well. I think that's about it football news-wise from Beamer today. There wasn't a lot to unpack there, but
back to that running back note, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing just because you have so many new guys in the program too that you're trying to get some reps to. So
got Attaway and Howell. I would assume those are the top two backs for the rest of spring now.
And DJ Braswell, who you know, we didn't really talk about this, but he was a 4-star coming in. And in this era of like talented players leaving the second that they don't make an immediate impact, he stuck around despite all of the portal movement. So that'll be interesting to see. Is he one of those like late spring summer guys that who knows, whatever, I'm not going to speculate on him leaving or not, but I think it's good that he's going to get some extra reps right now. And yeah, most of the injuries that you mentioned, of guys that are going to make an impact, Rocket Sanders and Juju McDowell should be back by the fall, we think.
Yeah.
Juju McDowell with a broken collarbone. So we'll see how quickly that heals. Any other football notes? I'm going to do like a freshman report, I guess, on GamecockScoop.com later this week. I do know that Dylan Stewart in particular was someone, like I was mentioned today, is someone that's been flashing in the spring. Several other freshmen are expected to make a pretty immediate impact, I think, although, and we'll talk more about this as we lead into the spring game here in a couple weeks, but I think maybe the story for me thus far is through the portal, maybe you don't have like the same single player upside, like Xavier Leggett, Spencer Rattler, Marcella Style, whatever. That's, you know, probably going to hear their name in the draft immediately or whatever. But I do think your depth might look a whole lot better at this point than it did at this point last year.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that in the big picture. I still want to see the last 2 weeks of spring ball, see how a spring game actually looks. But I think I can get with that overall. Just across the board, even if you are replacing some high-end talented, the actual production numbers for a guy like Leggett, it's going to be pretty tough to overcome.
All right, let's not bury the lead. Let's talk some women's basketball. South Carolina made it to the Final Four. So since we're talking about women's basketball, you want to talk about Dawn Staley tweeting about God on Easter, or do you want to talk about Kim Mulkey talking about the LA Times, or can we talk about actual basketball? What do you think?
I think it'd be cool if we could talk about the players who were on the court who made some really exciting things happen this weekend. That's just me. No, Caitlin Clark last night, Paige Beckers in the UConn game, going back to Sunday, Tessa Johnson and Full Wiley. And it's fine, though. I mean, coaches and whatever. And
yeah. No, it's just been fun that the – not fun at all, actually. It's been a little annoying, but – a lot of the headlines, over the weekend. And I get it, everyone. But I guess this is like the price of success to some degree, right? Women's basketball has expanded its profile hugely in the last 5 years or so. Some of the the women's tournament games have broken all sorts of records at this point. And with that extra spotlight, I guess you get all these people writing whatever silly headlines they need to write to try to capture a little, you know, piece of that attention or whatever. Yeah, let's talk actual basketball. So over the weekend, South Carolina had quite a scare against Indiana. Ended up kind of, you know, I always know it's a big deal when ESPN gives me my little alert of like, number one, South Carolina is only up by 4 points with 2 minutes to go. Can they hold on or whatever it is? And I got several of those throughout that game on Friday. And then obviously a little bit of easier time against Oregon State and a lot more fun puns against Oregon State throughout the weekend. And ultimately you end up, you know, where you expected to be, which is in the Final Four. But you were there. So kind of break down what you saw in those two games and then we can talk some more big picture stuff.
Yeah. So again, going back to Friday, you get out of the gates hot. You pick up basically where you left off against North Carolina. You're up, I think it was 22 at one point, offense, defense clicking. And then you just kind of, you know, it's always kind of hard to dissect what happens there. But just talking to some of the players in the open locker room after that game, I got a couple notebooks on the website if you're subscribed from the weekend. But that one in particular, the ball movement kind of got stagnant. It was sticking a little too much. Indiana went to a zone, which teams don't usually do when they're down and chasing the game, but South Carolina kind of had some problems going after that. And Indiana got hot. That was, I think it was Sidney Parrish for Indiana, who's also an Oregon transfer, just like Tahina Pow Pow, hit five threes. I think four of them were in the second half. And Indiana cuts that game to two with less than a minute to go from 22. And then Raven Johnson kind of puts the team on her back, hits a big three, draws a foul, hits two free throws. I think she had, I'm going to get the stat wrong now. I want to say it was seven of South Carolina's last nine, something like that. But hit the biggest shot of the game, hit that three to take it back to five. You escape there. I thought that was a very just – the question has been for a while if a team of without a superstar has a player who can take over. And Dawn said in the press conference that I just looked in Raven's eyes, she wasn't going to let us lose. So maybe that's your best takeaway from the weekend is you found your one takeover player. I think Raven Johnson took the Final Four very personally last year. You talk about, again, expanded profile, social media stuff, the hand wave thing she got sagging off her in the Final Four last year. She told me she takes 200 threes a day since then in practice. And someone else in the locker room told me it's actually more than that. And she just can't count. But either way, if she took that personally, she can hit threes now. She wouldn't let them lose Friday. And then Sunday, face a very physical, a very big Oregon State team. Got a couple really tough post players, and you kind of just have to grind them down. You're up four late. You go on an 8-0 run to end the game. Tessa Johnson had a big 3-point play in there, and you're back in the Final Four. That's kind of my 30,000-foot thoughts on the weekend. I don't know what you had from afar, but from being there, I thought you had a player take over, and you kind of had to grind out a couple games, and that's expected this time of year, and also maybe not the worst thing.
Yeah, I thought the profile you did on Raven Johnson after the game, or maybe it was you were looking back at it. I saw you post it, but it was really interesting, and I think that's what you needed right now. In the sense of maybe feeling that threat a little bit, and you look down the barrel of what's coming. We were kind of talking a little bit before this. Obviously, it's a Final Four matchup, so it's going to be tough. NC State's a formidable opponent, but I think the whole country at this point is kind of just like crossing their fingers that it ends up being South Carolina and Iowa in that championship. And then obviously, yeah, that's a rematch of the team that knocked out the best team that you had in school history. And I do think it's just like so interesting poetically that was the team that was supposed to go fully undefeated. And this team did not have nearly those expectations, and yet they're sitting two games away from maybe pulling off what that super veteran, you know, group of five of them played together for four straight years couldn't accomplish. Obviously, the rest is still unwritten here on whether or not this group can.
The rest is still on. I think that's a really good point. And I think that's my other like kind of just parting shot from the weekend is just like it, again, we talked about this in the SEC regular season title. We talked about it after they won the SEC tournament, but really a Final Four. You think about how hard it is to get to a Final Four. You think there's 300 and something programs, and there's seven who have been to four final or been to at least six Final Fours now. This is four in a row. Like, this is four in a row. You lost all five of your starters. I don't want to do the underdog thing. Like, you were still number six preseason. You're facing a team Friday at NC State who was literally unranked preseason and got to the Final Four. So, like, I definitely don't want to pull out the underdog card in that sense, but I don't think you were supposed to be here necessarily. I think this is supposed to be the back step, the rebuilding year, the whatever you want to call it, the retool. Just getting to four straight Final Fours is such an absurd achievement. Just how hard that is to do, how many programs have never been to a Final Four, only been to one, whatever. I think that's worth looking at, even though I know how this works. I understand that people are only going to be happy if they win two games next weekend. But still, it's a Final Four, and those are not easy to come by.
No, you get to hang a banner, right? So
yeah, cut another net.
Anytime you get to hang a banner, it's a good thing. I don't know. I don't have a ton to say about NC State. I think that they had the easiest path to get here, and probably are who you most want to match up with the four teams left. But I think we're all hoping that both South Carolina and Iowa make that rematch happen. I'm really looking forward to next weekend in Cleveland. Dawn is talking tomorrow before they go.
She talks at 5:30 on like the Zoom official NCAA presser today. They talk in person Thursday. And I'll be getting up there Thursday morning for that. Full coverage all weekend on GameCardScoop.com. And they have an open practice Thursday and they play Friday. Just an NC State thought, just kind of scouting them a little bit. They're kind of built similarly to South Carolina, maybe without as much talent, without a five stars, things like that. But they're kind of a depth across the board scoring team. They got five players averaging double figures, but I think all three of them are like 10 point something. They rebound well. They're, I think, top 10 in the country in rebounding. That's also like South Carolina. They take care of the ball well. That's also like South Carolina. They do seem to be kind of not quite a full Spider-Man meme because I think South Carolina is more talented, but the style, kind of the way the two rosters are built, are pretty similar. This is going to be a tough out. Like, this is, if you look up and it's a single-digit game in the fourth quarter, it doesn't mean South Carolina's played poorly, even though I think they're like an 11 or 12-point favorite. It's a Final Four game. It's going to be a tough out. I certainly would pick South Carolina to win it. But I also don't think – I think I'll put it this way. This kind of goes with the Indiana thing. I wrote about it Friday. We're just so far past the point of style points or performances really mattering at this point. Do you have more points than your opponent at the buzzer?
Yeah, no, a win is a win.
Yeah.
You look back at the last, let's say, 2 months of NC State's schedule. They had a close win at UNC in early February, but then were beat by UNC in late February. Obviously, South Carolina is very familiar with that team. Yeah. They beat Notre Dame pretty bad in mid-February, but then lost to Notre Dame in the ACC tournament. So it seems like there's a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on here with NC State. And yeah, which team shows up? I do think you probably can beat either side of it. But you know, if they go Hyde at this point, I think you're obviously you'd prefer that. And a win is a win, as you said. Any other just like overarching thoughts before we get into the weekend, and also before we get into baseball?
I feel a little stupid talking about Sunday when you still have to beat a very good NC State team on Friday.
It's just so tempting. It's the story. You do
kind of, because we probably won't record again until after the Final Four. Maybe we'll do like an instant reaction if they win the title or something. But you want to have the Iowa discussion, right? Like, all right, how does South Carolina match up? Who gets the Caitlin matchup? You know, does it look different in the post this year? Because Iowa's best post player who scored, I think, 20-something last year on you is not there this year. Like, it's tempting to talk about. And also, you look at UConn, like, that's a team South Carolina ran off the floor at CLA. They've won five in a row against UConn dating back to 2020. I don't think you're unhappy that UConn knocked out Southern Cal and got there. I think you feel better about your matchup with UConn than you would have them. And you definitely feel better about your UConn matchup in Iowa. And I think your ideal scenario is UConn winning a knockdown, drag-out game against Iowa, you know, and then having to turn around and play 40 hours later with seven. They only have seven healthy bodies. They're in the Final Four, which I think is why you feel good if you're South Carolina if you played UConn. But I think we're all thinking the same thing, that we're setting up South Carolina-Iowa Sunday.
Yeah, like you said, this is the last time we're recording before next weekend. So if South Carolina loses against NC State or Iowa loses against UConn, you can ignore the next 5 minutes. but otherwise, let's talk about it for just a second. So I saw this stat this morning, but Caitlin Clark became the second player ever to score 40 plus points in an NCAA tournament game. And both of them were with Haley Van Lith guarding her last year at Louisville, this year at LSU. And I think that that's kind of where the discussion starts, is how do you slow her down? Cause that was what we talked about going into that matchup last year. We were like, well, she might have to score 40 again. And she almost did. I think she scored 38 or something against South Carolina. Obviously, I don't think that the strategy would be to put one person on her for the entire game like Kim Mulkey decided to do. but is there anyone in particular that you think does match up well, or maybe a group that you just kind of try to keep throwing at her?
I think you got to go the group way. Like, you just kind of think back to some of the matchups South Carolina's had this year with some kind of elite, quicker. There's nobody like Caitlin, but like, they kind of threw a few different bodies at Paige Beckers and they played UConn. They threw a few different at Hannah Hidalgo when they played Notre Dame. I think Bree Hall is the easy answer. She's probably your best just overall like perimeter defender. She didn't play that much in the Final Four last year. I think she only had like 7 minutes that Iowa game. I don't know if you want the full Wiley matchup there. She's had some foul trouble in the past. Like, I think that can get a little bit haywire. Pow Pow's got some length, can maybe keep her at a distance, but we've all watched Caitlin Clark hit 30-foot threes for fun. So, like, how much is the length? I really think the whole thing here is, and you watched Caitlin last night, is scored 42 points, 41. Yeah, also had 12 assists, and I think that's really what killed LSU last night. She was spraying the ball over the court, cross courts, post entries, every transition. What are you doing to kind of get in the passing lanes to kind of seal off the post? The off-ball defense, I think, as important as the on-ball when you're facing a player who's as good of a passer as Caitlin. And that's where you're going to need a five-player locked-in effort every trip down. And Caitlin's going to get hers. I think that's cliche to say, but I don't see any scenario where you wake up and she has, like, 16 points on 20 shots. Like, she's going to score in the 30s probably. You got to live with that. It's the 12 assists that lead to, you know, 20, 30 more points that'll get you beat.
Well, and that's the thing, is if she scored 38 against last year's defensive group, which was historic, she can score against anyone. I think the other thing is that you're just a little bit better, and we've talked about this pretty much all season, you're a little bit better equipped to keep up if she does score 30-something. I think you're going to need to knock down your own fair share of threes, which South Carolina has done at various points throughout the season. If that matchup happens, it should be electric. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it ended up in the 80s or maybe even low 90s. And that would be a really fun night.
Yeah, it would be spent. Like I said, that's what everybody wants. I think if you're South Carolina, you want the UConn matchup. That is your path of least resistance to cutting down an end on Sunday. But this is what we all want. I think this is kind of what we're here to see. I'm looking forward to it. Be up in Cleveland and have notebooks from locker rooms and press conferences and stories and just everything else from this weekend in Cleveland. So if you're not subscribed to GameCoverScoop.com, you should do that. Is that about cover the women's stuff, I think? You have anything else you wanted to add before we get into the weekend? I'm driving up to Cleveland tomorrow. If anyone's got Cleveland Rex, I've never been there before.
I haven't been to Cleveland either. I don't have anything for you.
The weather's supposed to be brutal. There's like, I read a story in like one of the newspapers in Cleveland. They're expecting like a horrible storm all week. There's a chance of snow Friday. Like, so that'll be fun for the traveling national fans and media. But
I think we need to start bringing some of these
down south
end of season April, March down south. Yeah, exactly. It's usually, the weather's usually a little better, maybe a little rainy, but at least warm. If South Carolina ends up somehow losing to NC State, I'll clip that out later.
You don't even listen to it. It was never in the podcast. It's all an illusion.
Yeah. No disrespect to NC State. I think that that's going to be an important game too, but South Carolina and I are the two best teams left. If everything works out the way it should, see you Sunday. Is it Monday?
It's Friday, Sunday.
Yeah.
So it'll be Sunday.
All right, let's talk a little baseball. At this point, it's going to sound a little bit like a broken record, I think. But the roller coaster continues, right? So, we talked about it before we got on, and I ended my Sunday game story where South Carolina did win one on the road, barely on like a kind of a weird play at the end, after giving up four runs in the bottom of the ninth to Alabama and almost blowing game three there. But anyway, they won one out of three over the weekend, and they continue to struggle on the road. Again, that's not just a South Carolina problem. The SEC in general has skewed towards home matchups so far this year, but consistently inconsistent is pretty much the only way I think that there is to describe this team at this point in the season. And man, it's kind of, I hate being like this guy, but at this point, I think that's the only way that I would describe the Mark Kingston era at South Carolina. Yeah. There have been some high highs. Last weekend, a sweep over number three Vanderbilt. Nice. The way that they started the season last year, getting to a super regional last year is still an accomplishment, obviously. But I also feel like the narrative of what this team is and its flaws that continue to come out in these big matchups on the road seem to be pretty sticky at this point. They're still leaving runners in scoring position. They're still leaving tons of runners stranded. Before the seventh inning of game three this weekend, they were 1 of 25 with runners in scoring position. And then I think they ended the weekend like 5 of 29 or something like that. So they got four, at the end of game three. And that's how you won the game. But it's what we've been talking about really throughout the whole season. Keep showing up, especially on the road. And the schedule is about to get really tough.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where, like, all right, you take the 30,000 foot level on it. You're 5-4 in the league right now after two out of those three series on the road. You've got your head above water still. It's not a like disastrous end of the world position to be in at 5-4 in the SEC. You just look at it though, and you just like, this should, I don't even know how else to say it. Like, this just should be working better than it is right now. You got a great start from Eli Jones again on Thursday. Bullpen lets that one get away. You were 1 for 17 runners on base, I think, in that game. You're tied in the eighth inning on Friday. And my days are messed up because the Easter pushed the series forward. But in game two, yeah, you're tied in the eighth inning. That one gets away with your bullpen. You almost let Saturday get away. Offense came to life late in the weekend, but for most of the weekend looked like it has for a lot of this season. And then, like you said, like, this is a really good team at home. I think they're 18-1 at Founders Park this year. And that's after last year, we were also really good at home. But number three in the country, A&M, coming this weekend. Then you go to number six, Florida, next weekend. And then number one, Arkansas, is coming to Founders the weekend after that. That's your next three series. That's just your next, you're through nine games now in the league. Your next nine game segment is three of the top six teams in the country. You get two of them at home, but like, can you just count on you're going to keep winning games because they happen to be in Columbia? Like, even if the schedule's this tough, like, you know what I mean? Like, just, eventually you might actually have to start winning some road games if this home stuff levels off, just, which it might.
Just sweep the number three team in the country.
Hey, you did it last time. Yeah, Vanderbilt was three. That's true.
I do think, obviously, they do play better at home. And I do think there is a path where, yeah, you win more of those, at least the two home series, then you lose, or come out around 500 or whatever. I don't know. It feels like you're right in the middle of the mix in the SEC. You're right in the middle of the SEC East. It feels like a regional team at this point. If you keep that going, I don't know if that's good enough at this point. And especially with all that you had coming back from last year's super regional team, and the things that you thought that you had fixed in the portal and in recruiting, it's just, it hasn't been there. Pitching wise, I think you're a little concerned about Dylan Eskew.
Yes, I wrote about that in the weekend wrap if you're subscribed. But
I mean, there's been some other guys out of the pen that have looked pretty good. Ty Good has looked really nice. Matthew Becker's looked really nice. So I don't know. Do you shuffle it around and make one of those guys your Saturday starter, and then maybe Eskew becomes that backup guy on Sunday, like Becker has been playing that role, you know, lately or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but it's getting late early is the only way. But especially when you talk about that those three series that are coming up.
And I think too, I think I might have written this, but if you're going to make a change, if you wanted to try to like shuffle the pitching, this would be the week to do it. One, because the schedule coming up. Two, because you have an extra day of rest for everybody, because you played that Thursday through Saturday series and you're back on a Friday, Sunday this weekend. So if you wanted to have someone else start Saturday or move a Sunday guy to Saturday, like you can kind of move things around without messing with anybody's arms this week because you have that extra 24 hours of rest for everybody. I'm interested to see if the staff does that, because I think if you're going to make a move, this week's to make the move, I think.
That said, after all of the sort of chagrin, I guess, that we had. If you do come out of those three, so those nine games, well, let's say 10 games, because you got North Carolina thrown in there too.
That's true. You got midweek against another highly ranked team next Tuesday.
If you come out of those 10 games with 5 wins,
yep,
I think you're okay still. Like, you look at the back half of the schedule and you can really start to stack some series maybe.
Kentucky, Missouri, Georgia, the next three after those top six.
Yeah, I think it's Tennessee
and then last
series, and then the SEC tournament. So, I don't know. The sky is not totally falling. I did see that your RPI is very, very high. You've had a very tough schedule. And you're holding your own. The problem is, I think the way that you've been losing has been pretty consistent. And you wonder if it's too late to start to change that narrative or not, or if you're just a team that can't come through in the clutch hitting, because you haven't been at this point.
Yeah. And it's not a conversation I love having on April 2nd when we're talking about, you know, June postseason baseball, but I do think this team, if you're talking about making a run, if you're talking about getting back to a super, if you're talking about, let's just call a spade, saving Mark's job, you probably need to host again. I think I have a hard time with the way this team's played on the road, seeing them winning a regional in a top 16 team's ballpark. So if you're trying to host, well, then you really do need to start getting it going, because 16 and 13 last year got you to like the last hosting spot or second to last. That was with the Clemson series win, though, so you don't have that this year to play off of. Minimum 16 SEC wins, probably 17 to host.
And you're going to have to flip the script from last year, because last year you netted like 10 in the first four series. Obviously not on that pace at the moment. It's going to have to be a little bit more of a steady effort with a late push, which, to be fair, I've seen a lot of college baseball over the last 30 or whatever years. That actually sometimes is the winning formula, right? You get some momentum going at the end, ride it into the tournament, and then as long as you're hosting, like you said, anything could happen. Yeah. So I'm not trying to like bury the season. We could look back in a couple months and they're sitting in Omaha and we look dumb or whatever. I just think you've seen, what year is this in the Kingston era? 7, 8?
18, 19, if you count COVID, 20. 7 if you count COVID, 6 if you are just taking full seasons.
Yeah, and at this point, it's
kind of what it is.
It is what it is. And until you break through what everyone's perception is, there's going to be a hypercritical nature to this, and yeah, we're playing right into it. So
this got kind of existential for a March weekend series wrap where they didn't even get swept.
Right. And we were so positive last week. We're just as bipolar as the team right now. anyway, we will have full coverage this weekend on GamecastScoop.com of the women's basketball Final Four. Alan will be going up to Cleveland. I'll be writing a lot more on recruiting and spring football throughout the week. We'll be tag teaming the baseball this weekend. So definitely come check us out. Join us in some live threads, ask us some questions, and we are happy to interact. In the meantime, we'll be back next weekend. This has been the GamecockScoop.com podcast.